Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we're talking bankruptcy, debtors' rights, and what this means for you. Your rights and what these tools can do for you, or perhaps what these tools can do to you, and how it all works. And my guest tonight offers a two-minute debtor's solution. Whether you're looking for help or adding to your knowledge base, you've come to the right place. You've come to the right place. What do you do when someone uses your credit? Do some collection agencies mislead you and claim a non-existent judgment? How long will it take to file a bankruptcy? And why are credit cards so hard to pay back? Tonight, we're here to talk about bankruptcy and debtors' rights, and perhaps more importantly, to answer your questions. And as is becoming our practice, when discussing bankruptcy and debtors' rights, call us for a two-minute airtime solution. As always, there is much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. But do bear in mind that our attorney guest cannot provide you precise legal advice in your case, sight unseen. However, we're happy to pass along the legal principles to help assist you in your decision-making. And the legal guidance mightn't be the positions of his employer, clients, or guests, but after all, my guests are here to help. And as always, you can call with any questions about bankruptcy or debtors' rights. You don't have to jump in exactly where we may be in our conversation. Joining us tonight is Leon D. Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified bankruptcy law specialist, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, practices in Los Angeles, California, and is a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. Mr. Bayer is the co-author of The New Bankruptcy, Will It Work for You?, published by Nolo Press. And Mr. Bayer has been practicing bankruptcy since 1979. Leon, without further ado, thank you, and welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for that nice introduction. And good evening, everybody, all the listeners. I hope you're having a safe drive home if you're stuck in traffic. And if you're already back at home in the comfort of your own home, sit back and maybe grab your telephone and give us a phone call with some questions.
And I'll give out that number again a little later on in the show. But Leon, let me ask you, what do you do when a family member uses your credit report?
You ring an alarm bell. That's the first thing you do. Next thing you do is you call the police. I'm being a little facetious here because it's a serious problem and it does affect a fair number of people. I get a lot of phone calls in my office with this kind of a question. I think the first thing you do is you sort out the fact that this is a family. What doesn't matter if it's a family member or a stranger. This is a crime. Identity theft is very serious. And there are things you need to do right away if you want to be protected so that you don't get stuck with debts and credit, having to pay back credit that the family member runs up under your name. It's very important that as soon as you find out, you make a police report and that you notify all lenders involved who have extended credit under false pretenses because of the guile of the family member. If you don't do these things, you're probably going to get stuck paying the debt. And people get so reluctant because it is a family member. You know, blood is thicker than water. Well, I don't know if blood is thicker than money. But if you don't do something to stand up for your own rights, you're going to be stuck with the debt. I've done bankruptcy cases for many people who did not want to turn in a brother or a sister, a child who has, an adult child who's run up credit falsely. And they've been stuck to the point where they themselves had to file a bankruptcy case to get rid of the debts. It's very unfortunate because it would have been unnecessary had they taken the proper steps to begin with. So I hope you don't let that happen to you. Just the because the fact it's a family member doesn't excuse bad conduct. When somebody steps all over you, you ought to do something about it.
In a lot of ways, taking somebody's credit information and identifying information to get credit, to use your credit file, it's no different than them taking away your money. Although, to an extent, it's as if they hacked into your bank account, so they not only take your money, but they can take your future money.
Yes.
And you need to stand up for yourself, whether or not you want them prosecuted, which isn't necessarily a limitation on whether you're entitled to some relief from that debt.
Well, you know, police will tell you that a huge percentage of homicides are committed by people you know, or people who the victim knew. And I can tell you, a huge percentage of identity theft and credit fraud on against someone else is done by people in your own household, because they're the ones that have the easiest to access to your wallet or your purse, and you can't be watching that all the time. And if you have unscrupulous people living with you, who you've known all your life, you probably already know they have these propensities to do that, and they're really not trustworthy.
You have to be very careful with people that you live with and always make sure it's someone you know well and trust. But it could be someone you live with or someone you work with.
But roommates will do this.
It's someone who knows you well enough to figure out how you would write your passwords.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about collection agencies. Do some of them lie and tell you they've got a judgment against you for a debt that perhaps they don't?
Oh, probably this happened many years ago, but from a legitimate collection agency many years ago. Today, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is federal law, as well as very similar statutes enacted in various states. California has a very strong fair credit law. So legitimate collection agencies will not do this, but it goes on a lot from scam bill collectors. And I get a lot of phone calls to my office asking me, "Mr. Bayer, is this really was this a legitimate call?" And I got this bill collector called me up saying about this old debt and blah, blah, blah. And I have to pay it, and I need to pay them right then and there and over the telephone. And I don't even know if I owe that debt. Well, there's a huge amount of scam criminal debt collections that go on right now. And they go on constantly. They'll call you at random, or sometimes they'll even pull out, if you've had a bankruptcy case many years ago, they'll pull up the old bankruptcy records and look at the list of creditors that you filed. And they'll call you up claiming to be one of those creditors. They have some information about you. If you still live at the same address and so forth, they've got that in the bankruptcy schedules from many years ago that you filed. And they'll call you up, and they can sound very convincing, making you believe that you still owe this money and you have to pay up because they have this court judgment. They're going to garnish your wages or attach your automobile or your house. And they frighten the dickens out of a lot of people. And the whole point of it is to get you right then and there so scared that you will pay them money over the telephone using maybe a credit card or access to bank information or a check by phone. Some kind of a mechanism to take some money from you.
About that for a moment. This is not somebody that's convincing you at your front door to hand them cash. This is somebody who's looking for a payment that opens the door so that they could come back when they choose to and can take more.
Oh, that's right. And if it's not the same person, they'll sell the name, they'll sell your name to somebody else or hand your name and information to somebody in the cubicle next to them, and that person will call you again in a week or so. Because if they find a person who's vulnerable, they're not going to let you go. They hang on there.
It's no different than the scam call you get about your grandson needing bail. And halfway through giving them your credit card number, you realize, wait a minute, I don't have a grandson. Or the one who calls and says, you just need to give a little front money. You've won this huge award.
We need some info
for that. That's another one that's
frequent. You know, you've won the Irish sweepstakes, and you know, but there's some taxes that have to be paid before we can allow this money to be exported out of Ireland and sent to you. And you know, we need $500, and you know, if you stupidly pay it, they'll call you back again in a few days. Hey, everything looks really good. We're about ready to send it, but there's some other tariffs that have to be paid, and it's X number of dollars more. I'm really sorry, but you're going to get it all back. Don't worry about it. These are scams. These are done by criminal syndicates. They operate usually out of third world countries. It's impossible to track them down. It's impossible to get your money back. You're not going to get your money back. Crooks don't pay their debts. And if you've been prey to some kind of a scam like this, you're not going to see your money again. In fact, I have done bankruptcy cases for probably, in the last 10 years, I've represented maybe half a dozen people who have been scammed on the internet into thinking things like this, that they're helping somebody who they've never even met and know only through an internet contact, because that person's contacted them and befriended them through some chat site or something, and that they just need some help to pay some taxes, and they're going to get millions of dollars from an inheritance because the country of origin has put a hold on the money, won't allow the money to leave the country until these duties and taxes are paid, and I just need a couple $1,000, then you'll get your money back, you know, immediately. And these are just scams. And I have had people who were victimized by this. They not only have lost their entire life savings, in some cases, $500,000 of one client, in another case, almost $1 million. And then they go into debt to continue paying the criminal because they're convinced, they're absolutely convinced that this is truthful, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. And they just keep on answering the demands for more money, more money. Don't worry, we're almost there. We're going to get the money. We're going to get it. I'm going to share 50% of that inheritance with you because you've been so good to me. And it's all a scam. And you will never get your money back, ever. And you may wind up in my office doing a bankruptcy case.
So let's say we do want to come into your office and do a bankruptcy case, or an office of another practitioner who does bankruptcies. How long would you say it would take on an average for a reasonably competent attorney to file a bankruptcy case once we've met, once they have all the pertinent and current information? And yeah, of course, they paid in full first.
Okay. That's a good question. And, you know, I would say at least 2 or 3 weeks. You know, the average lawyer is not just sitting there with their feet on the desk waiting for you to walk in and hire them. There's a backlog of work of other clients that have come in, and it takes the modern bankruptcy case is probably going to be 65, 70 pages of legal gobbledygook. And I do mean gobbledygook. And it takes a lot of time and effort to prepare that. And it's not like putting a dollar in a vending machine and out comes a can of Coca-Cola at the car wash, putting together the case and actually doing the assembly of all of these forms and the drafting of those forms, the information that must be supplied with that. It does take time.
Only if you want to do it right.
Oh, yeah, only if you want to do it right.
And there's pretty severe consequences if you don't do it right.
If it's not done right, your bankruptcy can be denied. So it is pretty severe.
Or maybe somebody gets let off the hook and the rest of your creditors go forward and you don't know who that's going to be.
But if you're really in a hurry, and I do occasionally get clients who are just wrought. overwrought with anxiety and worry, and they just, for somebody like that, would just move their file to the front of the line and get it done for you. And so, but in the average case, expect about 3 weeks or so for normal clerical processing. Yeah, I'd say that's a fair bet.
So my problems aren't so severe. I don't need to file bankruptcy, but tell me a little about why, how and why credit cards are so expensive to pay back.
Oh, well, credit cards really are not expensive if you don't overspend. But if you think of the credit card as a tool to let you have something today that you're not going to pay for until much later, you can get into your, you can get over your head with it. You can get up to your neck in debt. And this is where the bankruptcy lawyer comes in. Interest is expensive. Now, everybody knows what interest is. You have to pay interest on money you owe. And it's no different than renting an automobile. You go to Hertz or Avis or some other rent a car, budget rent a car. You rent a car, you know you're renting something. You're going to use it for a while and you got to return it. Money is the same as renting a car. Interest is the rental fee we all pay for the use of somebody else's money. In the case of a credit card, it's going to be a bank, and they make money by renting money to consumers. They rent us the money. If we don't pay it all in full, when we get the next credit card statement, then the following month, you're going to owe the minimum payment plus interest. And let's say you run up a debt, $5,000-$6,000. And let's say your interest rate is, you know, maybe 19% per year. If all you do is pay the minimum payment, it may take you 20 years to pay off that credit card. 20 years. And you're also going to pay credit card annual dues. If you're just making minimum payments, you're a fool. You're absolutely a fool to do that, because by the time 15, 20 years later, when you finally succeed in paying it off after you've been paying just minimum monthly payments, always on time, but minimum monthly payments, that debt has quadrupled. You could, if you owed initially $5,000, you could have paid back $20,000 probably to that bank. So don't do that to yourselves. Save up your own money. If there's something you want to buy that's, I mean, look, a major purchase like an automobile is different because that's not a revolving debt like a credit card is. But on a credit card, you want to buy a new stereo or something or a bunch of new clothes, save up your money and pay cash. Don't be a fool. But that's why credit cards are so expensive and so hard to pay off.
So basically, when absent an emergency, use it as a charge card rather than a credit card.
Yeah.
So I've been asked by a listener, what happens if you stop paying all your credit cards? I mean, after all, the only income is Social Security. Listener's retired. The only property he has is a 20-year-old car and the clothing he has. You know, what can they do to him? Why should he bother with paying them back or filing bankruptcy if he can just walk away and there's nothing they can do? Well, or is there?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And a bankruptcy lawyer does encounter people like this who come in to file a bankruptcy. In my office, we will tell the person, you are judgment proof. And here's why we say that, and here's what it means. The only way a creditor on a credit card could do anything to you is to sue you in court. If you absolutely refuse to pay, say, I'm not going to pay you. I'm just not going to do it. And you don't pay it. The only thing they can do to you is to take you to court. They file papers in a court. They file a lawsuit telling the court how much money you owe, and the reason that you owe the money is because you had a contract to pay a credit card. And ultimately, they will probably get a court judgment against you. A court judgment is a decision. That's what the term judgment means. It's a decision by the court deciding how much money you owe and who you owe it to. Now, a court judgment has certain magical qualities to it. A judgment, once it's obtained against you, allows the creditor to get the sheriff to issue, to enforce a levy against your bank account, take your money, or garnish your wages, or take other possessions that might be of extreme significant monetary value. But for that listener who wrote that question, they've already, the listener has told us they get Social Security, they have no other income, they have no assets other than an old car. Well, the reason we tell a person like that you are judgment proof is because if the creditor gets that court judgment against you, they have no way to enforce it. The law protects your Social Security, even if it's in the bank account. So they can't take away your Social Security money. The car is too old. They can't take away the old car. And you got nothing else. So we say that you are immune. You are judgment proof. And yeah, you're going to ruin your credit. You put up with some nasty phone calls, maybe reminding you that you owe money. And bill collectors today are not allowed to threaten you or call you names or to insult you or use bad language. They can't threaten to do things to you that are illegal. But they can say politely, look, we'd like you to pay this, but if you don't, we're going to go to court and we can sue you and get a court judgment against you. And if you are going to stay in a financial rut the rest of your life, you're only going to have Social Security income. You're never going to have any other income. You're never going to have anything of value. And that's the way it's going to be the rest of your life. Then you are immune to that debt. And if you don't pay it, nothing's really going to happen, except you're going to get lawsuit papers and things that look a little intimidating. You can always take them to your local friendly bankruptcy lawyer and get some reassurance that you're okay. And it's not a bad idea to do that. But that's what we mean by saying that you are judgment proof. And if you don't pay, nothing really bad is going to happen to you. And we explain what the process is for them getting a court judgment. But beyond the fact you have this outstanding judgment and your credit is gone, you can't expect really to get any significant new credit. You know, you can just thumb your nose at them the rest of your life, however much longer that's going to be.
And the flip side of that is if you unexpectedly do come into some money, your Aunt Millie leaves you a lot of money or something of the kind, they'll be in line with their handout and you've allowed them to get a leg up.
And, you know, they might check into your assets periodically. If they get a court judgment against you, they can even get a court order requiring you to come down to court periodically for what's called a judgment debtor examination with a subpoena that you must bring current bank statements and other financial records. And they can do this to you about every 3 months or so. They generally don't. It's pretty rare these days to see judgment debtor hearings, except in extreme cases where they know you have assets. But they could keep watching, and a court judgment in California, and most of you who are listening are in the state of California, a court judgment is good and enforceable against you for 10 years. And before that 10 years is up, they can go into court and file some papers to have the court judgment renewed again. So they could stay after you the rest of your life, theoretically.
Now, can't you stay ahead of scanners, one step ahead, by trademarking your name? I mean, wouldn't that keep the scammers or the collection agencies and that, other illegal matters, won't that hold them at bay and get them in trouble?
You know, Your legal rights has some of the smartest people in the audience to ask such a question. Man, where do they come up with this? Trademark your name, copyright your name to protect you from scammers. Well, it's a funny thing about scammers that you have to keep in mind. They're criminals. Criminals, by their nature, are breaking laws. They don't have any remorse about doing it. They don't stay up at night feeling bad. I can't sleep tonight because I scammed this old lady. They don't care. They have no morality. And if they're willing to steal somebody's identity or scam you out of your money, well, they don't care if they broke a trademark law. They couldn't care less. They don't obey any laws anyway. So no, whoever wrote that question, nice try, ain't gonna help you. Not in this lifetime.
Sometimes people are smarter until they realize they didn't know something they didn't know. You can't always be a step ahead with something like that.
The great Winston Churchill had a saying for people like that. He said they were too smart for themselves by half.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're talking about bankruptcy and debtors' rights. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You're not limited to jumping in at the exact point we may be in our conversation. One last real question, before the break. Why don't I give up on financial pressure and debt? You know, how do I get rid of it?
All right. Well, that's a good question. It's a fair question, especially in the format of this program. And you get rid of it if you're eligible to file bankruptcy. Filing bankruptcy is not a big deal anymore. I mean, yeah, it may cost you some money for a lawyer. Maybe you can do the paperwork yourself if you're very clever. But a bankruptcy case will get you out of most debts. It'll even get rid of old income tax debts under most circumstances. This is a very powerful, important consumer protection law. This law's there for you. It was not written to be just compiled in a dusty old law book sitting on Jeff Hayden's shelf because he never pulls down to look at it. These are laws that were designed to give you a fresh start financially so that you can get out of debt. You don't have to stay in a rut. So what do? You pick up the phone, you call a bankruptcy lawyer, you make an appointment. Almost all bankruptcy lawyers will talk to you for free in their office. You don't have to be embarrassed. This is what they do. This is what I do.
It's also privileged.
You know, you get free legal help. At least your questions will be answered. You don't have to hire the lawyer. You're under no obligation. And if you don't like the lawyer, you think the lawyer's an obnoxious SOB like I am, then go to somebody else and get it done. But get out of your debt. Don't suffer. You don't have to suffer with it.
And the lawyer's not going to tell people you know because that information is privileged, which means that that lawyer can't take the information you communicated to him or her and share it with your family or your friends because it's confidential, protected by law.
Well, that's right. Except in Jeff Hayden's case, if he came to me for bankruptcy, the next time he's driving down the highway, he'd see a billboard from my office saying, Jeff Hayden came to me for bankruptcy, and if Jeff will do that, you ought to come to me also. And he'll see his big, beautiful picture posted all over the billboard because, you know, if it'd bring me business, I'm not beneath doing that.
You'll at least plug the show if you do that. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but I've been asked if it's possible for someone to take out a loan in your name without your knowledge. And if so, what are the steps that they would take to do so?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great question. It's very similar to the first question I answered at the top of the hour. And this is identity theft. It's serious. A huge percentage of these crimes are going to be committed by somebody against you in your own household. And the steps are the same as what I said before. You make a police report. Why do you do that? Well, the best reason to do it is because once you call the credit card company that's been scammed out of the money, they're going to ask, did you make a police report? Because they want to be certain that you're not trying to get out of a debt that you yourself really made. If you make a police report, there's a presumption in the law that the information that you put in the report is true. It is a crime to make a false police report. So your credit card company or the credit card company that along with you is a victim in this scam, because they too are the victim. They put out the money. And so they're going to want the assurance that this was really a scam, that you really were a victim, and then they will write off the debt or at least stop trying to collect it from you. There may be repercussions to the person who you suspect has done it. If it was done by a complete stranger, that's something else. Again, the money's likely never to be recovered by the bank. But the whole point of the exercise of making the police report and then reporting it immediately to the bank that's involved is to get yourself off the hook so that you don't have to pay out the money or have your credit ruined over non-payment of a bogus debt that you know you didn't make. And let me also point something else out. Your host tonight, every night, Jeff Hayden, is such a trooper. He has walking pneumonia. And he's in this studio tonight, running the board, taking your questions, hosting and emceeing this program, because this guy is a real trooper and he's very dedicated. So I hope you all appreciate what sickly old Jeff is doing tonight, coming down here on a cold winter's night to do the program.
I've learned to be careful of you, Leon, when you say the words break a leg.
Because Jeff really did break a leg the day of his first program, and he came to the studio with actually a broken bone in his leg that hurt like high hell. And he did that, and he didn't go to the doctor until the next day, and they put him in a cast and gave him some painkillers that he probably didn't take. But this guy is a trooper.
I swear I did not sell those on the open market. Let's move on. So my next caller is apparently of a somewhat higher income bracket. He's asking, what are the consequences of being unable to pay back margin loans on stocks? And can the lender collect their money back, or do they just lose the invested amount permanently?
I can answer this question. And when you have a margin loan on stock, this is an arrangement between you and the stock brokerage company in which they loan you money to buy stock. What a great idea. Borrow money. You know, you don't have money, but you borrow money if you have good credit and you buy stock with it. And if the stock goes up in value, you can sell it, pay back the broker, and you keep the profit. That's a great deal. Most stock brokerage companies are under federal requirements to charge a certain amount up front, meaning that you have to, if you're going to buy $100 worth of stock, you must have at least 20 or 30 bucks of your own money to put in so that it creates immediately a cushion of equity. But if the stock goes down in value, you make a poor choice, you buy the wrong stock, you took a chance, it's not paying off, the stock can reach a point where the money that they lent you, the value of that is used up, and even your own money that you put in at the beginning gets used up, and you can wind up owing money to the stock brokerage company. That is a legitimate debt. You owe that money. The stockbroker will sue you to collect it. So, you know, you're stuck if you're in that situation. And usually stockbrokers try to make sure that they've sold the stock before it reaches rock bottom, because they're smart. They don't want to be in a situation where they have to chase down people. It's much better to get their money back once the stock is clearly dropping and it drops below your equity position from the front money that you put in. But occasionally they'll mess up. I've had some cases like this. Once in a while they'll mess up, and then the position becomes worthless and they come after you with lawsuits. And it's usually on very large amounts of money. I've seen some for, you know, $100,000 or more that have been involved. But that can be discharged in bankruptcy, provided there was nothing fraudulent about your application to borrow the money.
How long does a charged off debt stay on someone's credit report and affect their credit score?
It will stay on for a total of 7 years. Now, don't confuse that with a statute of limitations. California has a statute of limitations. Statute of limitations is a law that tells us how much time a bank has in which to file a lawsuit against a delinquent credit card borrower or a delinquent borrower of loan money. On a written case of a written contract, such as the initial application to have a credit card or a loan application and promissory note on a loan, the time period for that limitation is 4 years from the date you've defaulted on your payments. If you defaulted more than 4 years ago, you could still be getting phone calls from a debt collector. Nothing wrong with that. They're allowed to do it. But they cannot threaten to sue you if they know that the debt is barred by the statute of limitations. Statute of limitations is a very important law. I have happily informed many people over the years, they don't need my services because they are sitting on debts that are old enough that the debts are covered by the statute of limitations. And sometimes the client will hire a lawyer just to send a friendly letter to the bill collectors and all to all the creditors pointing out this is barred from suit by the statute of limitations. Please go away and pound some sand.
So a hypothetical, suppose word gets out, we're taking it to the man. This year, all the students decide they're going to not pay their student loans back. What would happen with that after that?
Well, student loans and student loan programs set up by governmental agencies were designed to lend student loans to worthy borrowers so that they can attend school and perhaps even cover some of their living expenses and get higher education. And the idea behind this is government will loan money to Jeff Hayden so that he can improve himself and go back to college and then get a real job. And the idea is he's going to do that and then he'll pay back the loan, and that loan money then is returned to the government agencies. They can loan it out again to some other worthy student And it just goes around and around and around. The same money is intended just to keep recycling again and again through many generations of student loan borrowers. If everybody in the country who owes money on a student loan got together and they could all agree on anything, which sounds impossible because you can't get a room full of human beings ever to agree on anything unanimously, what would happen is the pool of student loan money would then dry up and there would be no fresh money to loan out to anyone else ever again. The government will hire debt collectors and come after you to sue you for the money that you owe. They can intercept your income tax refunds every year if you do get income tax refunds. They can send garnishment notices to your employer and take, I think, 15% of a paycheck, every paycheck, to get themselves paid back. So they have some strong arm powers to come after you to make you pay back the money. You don't just get to skate because everybody agreed to do the same stupid thing. But if it did happen, you would be the subject of debt collection by that governmental agency. And there would be no fresh money in the till to provide funding for new student loans. So it'd be kind of a catastrophe on many levels. But it would never happen because you can't get everybody to agree on anything.
So on the other side of the coin, I'm a lender. I lent a friend some money, and I can prove it. I've got proof. But this person refuses to repay. What are my options?
Go to court. Now, it depends on how much money is involved. It also depends upon whether or not you have the type of documentation you have to prove that you loaned them the money. If it's a small amount of money, maybe a few hundred dollars, maybe a few thousands of dollars, the place for you to go is small claims court because the process is pretty simple. The forms to be submitted are not as difficult or complex as they would be for a much bigger type of lawsuit in the regular superior courts of California. And the burden of proof that you need in small claims court is not as difficult as in the big grown-up courts. So you can get a court judgment in small claims court against your deadbeat friend that won't pay you. And once you have that judgment, you can do all the same remedies that the big guys get to use. You can get an order to garnish your friend's wages. You can get an order to levy their bank account and take the money in their bank. If you know about some other business that they own, maybe they own a store or something, you can have an officer from the sheriff's office go in there. And when customers pay money, the sheriff puts his hand in the cash register and takes the money out for you and doesn't give it to the owner of the business. So there's all kinds of neat, wonderful things you can do. But if your friend is really judgment-proof and just a complete hardcore deadbeat, maybe you're never going to get paid back. The best thing to do is don't do it. Don't loan money. If you're going to loan money, have them sign a promissory note describing how much money they're borrowing and how they're going to pay it back, what kind of monthly payments or weekly payments they have to pay. An individual who's not a professional lender in the lending business can charge 10% interest per year. You can add that, an interest provision, into your promissory note. On the other hand, if it's a really, really good friend, just consider it. It's probably going to wind up being a gift. If they can't go to a bank because no bank will loan them money, chances are you're never going to get paid back. The banks know what they're doing. If they won't loan somebody money, they are in the business of evaluating whether or not it's a sufficiently good credit risk to take a chance and give them a loan. And if a bank won't do it, just go into the transaction knowing you are not going to get paid back. If you do, it's wonderful if you get paid back, but don't count on it.
You know, I've been asked, what am I supposed to do? My credit score exceeds 800 points, but I'm still broke and living with family. What can I do with that?
You know, a credit score, a good credit score means you're an honest guy. At least you keep your promises to the banks if you owe money to them. And you wouldn't have a good credit score unless you've had some credit and you pay it back successfully, always on time. Then you get a good credit score. But if you feel like you're still broke and not getting anywhere financially, you may have an employment problem. Maybe you are working at a job that just doesn't pay you enough, and maybe you can do better. Why not try? There's no harm in looking around and always trying to find a better job. There's nothing wrong with that. And if you find you can't get a better job, maybe what you need is a second job. A part-time job. Make some extra money for yourself and start accumulating savings. The key to success in America is savings. Save more than you spend. Don't spend all your money. Save a part of it out of every check and let it build up. And that's how you get ahead. And if you're stuck in a rut, you know, you may have good credit. You can go get a bunch of cash on all your credit cards, but you're going to have to pay it back, and you have to pay it back with interest. We talked about that a little while ago in the first half of the program. It's stupid to be paying interest on credit cards. It's stupid. Don't do that. And save money and save money and save money. And if you're just broke, you don't have enough, get a second job. You don't have to work at a second job the rest of your life. Do it for a few months. Do it for a year until you get ahead and have some cash, a cash pad in the bank. That's what you do.
You know, we get another listener call from a 17-year-old. She's 17 years old, has debt from a gym membership where she just stopped paying. And now she's scared because the debt collectors are calling. She lied on the application. She didn't tell them she was 17. And now they're calling her. She doesn't want anyone to find out. Her parents are outraged. What can she do?
California has a law to protect minors from doing stupid things. And the law recognizes that minors should be protected from their debts. In this case, I think this listener, if you're listening into the program, you need to inform the creditor, the people who are collecting money for the gym, let them know what your real age was. And they're probably going to say, well, you lied. You said you were 18. Well, you know what? Even if you lied and you defrauded them, because you know what your real age was, and you fibbed. You knew you were fibbing, but you were a minor. And the gym, the business office at the gym, was in a good position to verify the information on your application. This could have been done very easily. You certainly went to the gym when you went to look at it to see if you wanted to belong and have a membership there. They should have at that point gotten a picture of your driver's license or looked at your ID to determine your age. If they failed to do it, or they failed to notice your true age, or they failed to care about your true age, you're off the hook. They can't enforce the debt against you that was incurred at the time you were a minor because they failed to exercise reasonable, justifiable reliance on what you put in the application. They could have looked at your ID to determine that you're not old enough. So you're going to be okay.
I have one person who wrote in, apparently taking a pretty harsh view of himself. Wouldn't you agree that filing for Chapter 13 bankruptcy, this isn't a result of medical debt or anything really forgivable, but just unsecured debt? I mean, wouldn't that make him a complete and total failure? His words, not mine.
Okay. Well, to that person who thinks he or she is a complete, total failure, The bankruptcy law doesn't judge you, except in the case where debts were incurred by you under deliberate fraudulent circumstances. Stuff happens in life, and sometimes people can do things that are a little bit dumb, such as charging up credit cards faster than you can afford to pay them off. And if the debt was incurred by you with the intention of paying what you were charging, you expected to pay it, you thought you could pay it, things work out, you lose your job, or in this case, maybe you don't lose your job, but you just can't pay it back, the law will excuse people from being a little bit dumb. And you can judge yourself any way you want to judge yourself, but the law doesn't step in to judge you harshly. If circumstances justify a bankruptcy case, then you are allowed to file it, and you should get a discharge of your debts and be able to move on in life. Jeff, you're telling me we've got some live callers that are not
afraid to talk on the air.
Not too timid about sending in emails because they don't want to go on the air. So we've got some live people.
Let's start with George from San Francisco. George, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Something that we didn't catch yet. We heard your update on the presumed honest efforts by various people. What would you have? What kind of advice would you have for people who are tempted by the late night television offer that says you can set up your own business, you can have money by this afternoon, we can take care of it all? It's a package deal, obviously. Could you say anything about that?
Yeah. I didn't say anything about it, but I will now. So George in San Francisco, I see the same ads, and they're tempting. Why do they have those ads? You know, those ads cost money for the lenders to put them on the airwaves in order to tempt you. They spend good money on that, and people do get tempted and do accept those offers, and sometimes wind up with debts they can't pay back. The law will discharge that in bankruptcy, provided you did not commit fraud. When you apply for such a debt, you're going to call them up and tell them you saw the advertisement, and they'll ask you on the telephone to answer some questions, and they'll find out what your income is or what type of business you have. If you're honest and you tell them the truth, the debt will be dischargeable in a bankruptcy case. And that's how you can get out of it. If you owe enough money to justify filing a bankruptcy, then you wouldn't have anything to worry about. And George, does that answer the question? George,
I think we lost George, but
still with us.
It looks like we lost George's call, but George, it's really good to hear from you. Welcome back. Let me turn it to Pablo from San Pablo. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I wanted to say I saw a little blurb about getting rid of the IRS enforcement arm, and it got me thinking. I think they should get rid of the income tax entirely and replace it with a sales tax. And there have been studies on this by a bipartisan faction of the Congressional Budget Office that says if you levy a 23% sales tax, you'll actually get more money out of the than you currently get from the income tax, and you can abolish all the other taxes, and you can waive such sales tax on rent and food, so you're not impoverishing the underprivileged even more because they're not going to get hit that hard. But people are still going to buy their yachts, and they're still going to buy their Rolls Royce.
Sure. Pablo, I think that's an interesting concept. However, as a very long-time resident in California, I see these taxes going up and up in companionship with income taxes and excise taxes that you pay on gasoline and everything else. And I don't know that 22% sales tax is going to solve it, because it seems like government never gets enough money to make them stop raising the tax rates. And taxes like that are called regressive by economists because it means that everyone who is a consumer pays the same rate of tax on their expenditures. Whereas income taxes are considered to be progressive taxes because people with higher incomes are taxed at a higher rate. The government won't know on a sales tax whether you are a millionaire or whether you're a workaday kind of person who makes minimum wage. They don't know.
There is a way to fix that.
Of what you're spending that moment. And then you pay the tax rate on it. So you're going to wind up paying more in taxes if you're a low-income person than you would have paid under an income tax rate. So I don't think very much of your suggestion.
There is one way to fix it, something in between your perspectives. And that might be to switch to a sales tax and away from an income tax, but for low-income people, to allow them to file for a negative income tax, where they get reimbursed for some of these taxes, and those are subsidized for people of lower income.
Well, we actually already have that.
Pablo, thank you for joining us again on Your Legal Rights. We're down to about the last minute. Do you want a few, want a minute or so for any final advice?
Sure. All you people that send in email questions, don't be so shy. Pick up the phone like Pablo and George did and ask us live on the air. It's really more interesting. But I want to leave you with this thought. If you have debts and you're worried about them and it's more than you can deal with, don't be afraid to talk to bankruptcy lawyers. Every bankruptcy lawyer I know, and I know hundreds of bankruptcy lawyers, I used to be the president of the Bankruptcy Bar Association in Los Angeles. I know hundreds of bankruptcy lawyers. Almost all of them will give you a completely free consultation. And they will listen to what your problem is. They'll ask you some questions to round out the information. And they'll give you advice. And it doesn't cost you anything. And you will finally find out what your legal rights are. So don't be shy. Go do it and do it now.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing a general review of bankruptcy and debtors' rights. Our guest tonight has been Leon D. Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman & Liotta, certified bankruptcy law specialist, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, and longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. Leon, thank you. We return next week with our year-end tax tips, where, like every Wednesday at 6, we're here to take your call and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Leon Bayer, once again, and thanks all of you for joining us. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.